Welcome back, Travis, as well. It's good to have you back. I think about this church. I think about a church family. And those of us who are part of larger families know how it is. As the families expand, as families get larger, it's harder and harder to have them all together at one time. And I thought about that this morning, that now Travis is back, but now Ronald's gone, and of course Durbin still is not here, but that's part of a large family, right? When you have a large family, it's just harder to have family together. And I do like when we can have a complete family gathering in Winchester, but it seems like it happens probably less and less. But that's okay, because there's lots of places in the world that need help. There's lots of other service opportunities, and if we as a family can bless other people, that's a wonderful thing. I do want to greet you this morning in the name of Jesus, the one who said this, or where two or three are gathered together in my name, there am I in the midst of them. And my question to you this morning, do you believe that Jesus is here in the midst? I believe that he is. And if Jesus is here, then when you read the Word of God and you read about everywhere Jesus went, generally he performed a miracle in a group of people. So I know last Sunday, Brother Sherwin started by saying that in every preacher's house, generally there's a miracle happens somewhere between Saturday morning and Sunday morning. And I believe that is true. But I also don't think the miracle stops when we get up to preach on Sunday morning, because sometimes, many times, we say things that we probably shouldn't have. And we also don't say some things quite right or that we should have said. And that's okay, because the miracle, being Jesus in our midst and he's in the performing miracles, he can perform a miracle in each one of our hearts that we can get something from it if we want. And this morning you can be blessed. Whether I get it all said right or all said wrong, you can still be blessed, because Jesus can perform that miracle if you believe that. And if you're come this morning and it's your desire to be fed with some old truth or some new truth, you will be fed. And I guess the opposite is true. If you came with a critical spirit, you'll probably find many things to criticize. That's the way it is, the way life works. Now, I don't want to use that as an excuse this morning for a preacher to be lazy, because we just stand up here and say a few things and God will take it. And that's okay. That does not give us an excuse, but it is what I find this morning as a reason to preach. And that is that God can perhaps use my few inspirations. It's not going to be a long message. I didn't know what all Travis would share. And as he was sharing his little experience, I wonder whether this message even fit. But that's our humanity, and we need to believe in some way that it will. I titled the message for this morning, The Purpose for Living, or you maybe could say, The Whole Duty of Man, because I'm going to take the message out of Ecclesiastes. I read through that not too long ago, and I was thinking about, especially the first two chapters, thinking about what all is there and what all Solomon wrote, and he says, this is vanity. It's just vanity. So much of life is vanity, and I was pondering that this week, and I pulled up behind this vehicle at a stoplight, and it had on the back, one life, live it. And I guess they asked the question this morning to you. Of course, it was on a Jeep, whether that makes any difference. But I do have a question to you this morning, and that is, we know we have one life. We have one life. And are we living it? And when we think of living it, what is living it? So, recently we had a birthday in our home, and I hope it's okay I've used this. Hopefully the sound guy don't mind too much. But you know, when there's different ages in life, and sometimes you're convinced that when you get to a certain age that then you'll be able to live it. And in this particular case, it was 18, and I don't know how he feels about it now. I didn't ask him. But I know as school students, when you're in school, you think, and I hear this from people that sit behind me in church, that the living it is just around the corner. Once we get out of school, then we can live it. And or once we get our license, then we can live it. This one life that we have, then we can live it. And perhaps young people, when they start to court, if once we get married, Or maybe it's when you have a special friend. Then you can live it, this one life. And maybe you're married and you think, when we have a child, then we can live it. And after you have several children and the children are crying and they're puking and they have fever and you don't know what, you think, man, when the children finally grow up, then we can live it. Am I wrong, or am I the only one that thinks like this? I mean, that's, and I went, you know, you get up in the morning and you you go to work, or you sit behind the desk and try to sell more work, and you think, well, maybe if I get that job, then I'll make the cash flow a little bit better, and then I won't have to worry so much if the next job doesn't come. So it's just, in this one life that we want to live, it's just out of reach. It's always right around that corner. Or maybe if we finally get the house built on the property, or the property bought, or the shop built, or whatever your thing is, it's just, is that, are we just about to live it, or are we living it? That's my question this morning. Well, I went to the store. I went to Walmart with my wife the other week, and this has the thought of sometimes you just wonder about working and trying to make a living. I went to the store with her the other week, and I pushed a cart, and she helped to fill the cart, and I helped to fill the cart, and we got to the cash register. You know, we always have this little thing that, wonder how much money this is, you know, wonder what this will cost. And this cart was only about two-thirds full, and we pushed it through, and $450, and I thought, if only stuff didn't cost so much, maybe we could live it. Now, I will tell you this morning that after Travis was finished, a lot that was in that cart had something to do with smell, and that is more expensive. So he says, a Ukraine don't use it. Maybe that's our problem. Maybe we could live it if we just skip the perfume. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what it would be like this morning in church, because we don't have open air services. But live it. Well, maybe as a teacher, there is some school teachers here, and maybe you think that if only the next time you taught that lesson, that student would get it, that then you would live it, because it would just work. Well, we can go through all of life, I believe, with that mentality that if just around the corner, just around the corner, and we can never find satisfaction in simply living the way God wants us to live. We have this preacher in Ecclesiastes, and I'm going to read Ecclesiastes 1 and 2. It's going to take just a little bit of time, but I'm going to take most of my thoughts from these two chapters this morning. And think about, as I read, what this preacher is saying about these things that I just spoke about. Many of these things he somewhat covers, and this is what his conclusion is. Ecclesiastes 1, the words of the preacher, the son of David, king of Jerusalem. Vanity of vanity, saith the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What profit hath a man of all his labor which he taketh under the sun? One generation passes away, another generation cometh, but the earth abideth forever. The sun also arises, and the sun goeth down, and hasteth to his place where he arose. The wind goeth toward the south, and turneth toward the north. It whirleth about continually, and the wind returneth again according to his circuits. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. Unto the place from whence the rivers come, thither they return again. All things are full of labor. Man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. The thing that hath been, it is that which shall be, and that which is done is that which shall be done. And there is no new thing under the sun. Is there anything whereof it may be said, see, this is new? It hath already of old time, which it hath been already of old time, which was before us. There is no remembrance of former things, neither shall there be any remembrance of things that are to come with those that shall come after. I, the preacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem, and I gave my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom concerning all the things that are done under heaven. This sore travail hath God given to the sons of men to be exercised therewith. I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and vexation of spirit. That which is crooked cannot be made straight, and that which is wanting cannot be numbered. I communed with my own heart, saying, lo, I am come to great estate, and have gotten more wisdom than all they that have been before me in Jerusalem. Yea, my heart had great experience of wisdom and knowledge, and I gave my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. And I perceive that this also is vexation of spirit. For in much wisdom is much grief. And he that increaseth knowledge increaseth sorrow. I said in my heart, go to now. I will prove thee with mirth. Therefore enjoy pleasure, and behold, this also is vanity. I said of laughter, it is mad and of mirth. What doeth it? I sought in my heart to give myself unto wine, yet acquainting my heart with wisdom, and to lay hold on folly, till I might see what was that good for the sons of men, which they should do under the heaven all the days of their life. I made me great works. I builded me houses. I planted me vineyards. I made me gardens and orchards, and I planted trees in them of all kinds of fruits. I made me poles of water to water wherewith the wood that bringeth forth trees. I got me servants and maidens, and had servants born in my house. Also had great possessions of great and small cattle above all that were in Jerusalem before me. I gathered me also silver and gold and the peculiar treasures of kings and other provinces. I got me men singers and women singers and the delights of the sons of men as musical instruments and that of all sorts. So I was great and increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me. And whatsoever mine eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy. My heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was the portion of my labor. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought, and on the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit. And there was no profit under the sun. And I turned myself to behold wisdom and madness and folly. For what can the man do that cometh after the king, even that which hath been already done? Then I saw that wisdom excelleth folly, as far as light excelleth darkness. The wise man's eyes are in his head, and the fool walketh in darkness, and I myself perceiveth also that one event happeneth to them all. Then said I in my heart, as it happeneth to the fool, so it happened even to me. And why was I then more wise? Then I said in my heart, this also is vanity. For there is no remembrance of the wise more than the fool forever, seeing that which is in the days to come shall all be forgotten. And how doth the wise man as the fool? Therefore I hated life, because the work that is strength under the sun is grievous unto me, for all is vanity and vexation of spirit. And I think I'll stop reading there. Here we have a man that thought, certainly right around the corner is the life that I want to live. And he did all in his powers to have that fulfilled. And he had everything, and I can't imagine if I had everything that he had in our minds, we tend to think then we would have it. And he says it's at the end, it's nothing. I mean, he still didn't have this feeling of fulfillment. It was vanity. And you can continue to read and read through Ecclesiastes in the near future, perhaps, and think about how many times and what all he writes that he experienced in life, and then he just says it's vanity, it's nothing. And now you can turn over to chapter 12, is what his conclusion on this whole matter is. And I like the first verse of chapter 12. I'm going to read that one, and then I'm going to jump to the end of the chapter. He says this, remember now thy creator in the days of thy youth. So one of the most important things is in life, and that is, first of all, that we remember who our creator is. And then, in verse 13, he says this, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. So all these things that was vanity, he even spells out in chapter 9, if you read about how that he found out that the same thing happens to the righteous man as the wicked. Sometimes we think that, well, if we follow God, then there's certain things that should happen. And in reality, righteous people die and wicked people die, and it rains on both. And he says, you know, it's the same. But in the end, Solomon writes these words in verse 13. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. So there's really only one thing in life, if you're going to live it, that matters. And that is fear God and keep his commandments. Now we could spend the rest of our life trying to prove that this preacher was wrong, but you would come to the same conclusion. Are you convinced of that fact this morning? I've divided the message into two parts. The first part, I'd just like to consider some of the things that he observed in the first two chapters that brought him to the conclusion that the only thing that really matters is fearing God and keeping his commandments. And then the second part of the message, I want to look a little bit at why fearing God and keeping his commandments is the whole duty of man and how we can find fulfillment in that. So the first point here, and I know some of the school-age children are taking notes, so hopefully I can make it easy for them so they get an A-plus tomorrow at school. But the first point I have here, and that is, if you're looking for something new in life, Solomon just says there's no new thing under the sun. And you know, we always tend to think that maybe up until this point, so many people had it wrong, and if we just do it one way different, then that would be right. There'd be some new thing. And Solomon just simply says here in verse 4 that one generation comes and another generation passes away, another generation comes, and things just continue. And there's just nothing new under the sun. There's nothing new about life. There's every thought that you have, somebody probably already thought it before, and what became of them? They died. And now you think you have this bright moment again, and it's just a repeat of time. The second thing that I see that he figured out, and that is that no matter how much wisdom you have, you will wear yourself out trying to figure everything out. And we see that down in verse 13 of chapter 1, where he says, I gave my heart to seek and to search out wisdom concerning all things that are under heaven. And then I just like how he puts on the end, this sore travail hath God given to the sons of men to be exercised therewith. And I think it's interesting. I think God laughs, if I can use that term, or he's humored by the amount of people that try to figure out exactly how the universe was all happened and came about and how it started, and exactly what all is calling climate change and all this other stuff that's getting ready to blow the universe apart. And he gave them wisdom to search these things out, but they can never figure it out, and he knows that. Because in life, finally, it comes down to the point that we never will figure everything out, the way creation and everything operates. We will never figure out exactly how everything that's in the Word of God and exactly what all it means. But God wants us to just finally get to the end and say, you know what, it doesn't matter. We just believe. We just believe by faith that God did this. There's no scientific way to prove everything that's in life. And men have this sore travail that they work. And they're still working. They worked for years to try to explain how the universe came about, and they can't ever explain it, and they never will. The third thing I see here, and that is, he realized there's so many things in life that you just can't change. And that was a good one for me to think about there in verse 15. That which is crooked cannot be made straight. And, you know, we see so many things in life that we just wish we could change. And you just think, if only I could just grab a hold of that thing, we could straighten this thing out, and then it would be good. And then you begin to realize that, you know, if I got that one straightened out, we can't straighten it out anyway. But if you did get that one straightened out, if you start to look around, there's just so many more that you can't even number them. That's what he says. He says, even when I look around and think about all the things that should be changed, then suddenly it dawns on me that even if I did get them straightened out, there's so many more that without number that we can't fix. So we will wear ourselves out if we're continually trying to change. And we just have to accept what God has brought in our life. We need to accept the way other people do things. Sometimes as business owners and as older people, we have in our mind that a certain thing needs to be done a certain way. And I'm working with an older gentleman right now that he has certain things he wants in his building, and he's about 80. I was talking to a fellow that was also communing with him about selling him some stuff, and he says, I don't know why he does what he does. And I just said to the younger gentleman that was dealing with him as I was, I said, well, you know, I said, when an 80-year-old man tells me he wants something, I just give it to him. I said, he's 80 years old. Who am I half his age going to argue with him? I probably ain't going to get anywhere. He ain't going to appreciate me. I said, he's old. He has figured out, and we get old and we want something. I hope somebody just says, well, if that's the way you want to do it. We can't straighten everything out in life. And Solomon realized that. He says, just let things that bother you, just let it go, because you'll never get them all straightened out. The fourth thing I see here, and that is in verse 17, that he gave his heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. Well, I guess in verse 16 it says, lo, I come to great estate and have gotten more wisdom than all they that have been before me. Yea, my heart had great experience of wisdom and knowledge, and I gave my heart to know wisdom. Fourth thing I have here is the more we know, the more we find out that we don't know. And there was a quote by Ralph Sockman, I don't know the man, but he said this: the larger the island of knowledge, the longer the shoreline of wonder. And if you want to see a little bit how that looks, there's nothing wrong with being wise, but if you are all about getting wise, the bigger the island gets, the more area you realize you don't know. And that's where Solomon was. He got so much wisdom, yet he says, in a way, it was vanity, because the more he learned, the more he realized that there's so much more I'll never know. and you can get lost in that. So then you can flip to the other side and say, well, then I don't need to know nothing. That way it's, that's not what he was teaching here. But he was simply saying that he found in life that even having lots and lots and lots of knowledge never brought fulfillment, because then you just were at the, you just knew that there was so much more you didn't know. The fifth thing I see here is pleasure seeking only brings temporal happiness. And we see that in chapter 2, where he decided that I'm just going to enjoy pleasure. But we live in a pleasure seeking world, and there's always this new thing, because everything that we think would be really fun, you do it a time or so, and then a lot of times it wears out, and you need the next new thing. And Solomon understood that. And he says, I chased the entertainment thing, and it brought some pleasure, but then in the end it's vanity. It's nothing. The sixth thing I have is things don't bring satisfaction. And when you read down through here, you see this king that had everything. He had the dreamed estate. He had the most beautiful flower beds, and he had the gardens and the fruit-bearing trees and the irrigation system. He had all the servants it took to keep all this thing running, and he had lots of cattle, and he had all the money he made. He had all the money that he ever wanted. And instead of having speakers sitting around playing his music, he had live bands playing his music. He had it all, and in the end, he just says, this is vanity. It's unsatisfactory. It doesn't bring, it gives you it gave him a feeling of emptiness and unsatisfaction. And everything that he wanted was just always a vexation. This thing was just always right out there, right out of reach, right out of grasp. You never quite get it. And this morning, if that's what we think, if we think that the life to live is right around the corner, trust me, it will always be right around the corner. And it doesn't matter how old you are this morning or how young you are, but we need to find contentment in being right where we're at. And that brings me to the second part of the message. And why is fearing God and keeping his commandments the whole duty of man? And why does this bring fulfillment? Well, the first thing I have here, and that is we are created beings. So when Solomon got to the end of all this, and this is the whole duty of man, he was beginning to understand that we are not our own. There's no one sitting here that decided, I'm going to be born into a certain home. Probably at some spot, some age of your child, they all would prefer to have been born in somebody else's home. That's just the way life is. But there's no one sitting here that was able to make that choice and say, I want to be born in a certain home. Nobody here has been able to make the choice, I wanted to be born in America versus Ukraine or wherever. And because of this, we have a responsibility, and we will never find fulfillment in trying to always serve me, because we're owned by God. And the second point here is that God created us for a purpose. And we can turn and read that purpose in Revelation 4. I want to turn there and read what the purpose of mankind is on earth. We have here in Revelation 4, verse 10, we have 9 to 4, verse 9 to 11, we have the beasts. And then we have the 24 elders fall down before him that sat on the throne and worshipped him that liveth forever and ever, and cast their crowns before the throne, saying, Thou art worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honor and power. For thou hast created all things, and for thy pleasure they are and were created. So we are here, and the reason that we can find fulfillment only in fearing God and keeping his commandments is because that is what he designed us for. He created us, every one of us, it says, for thy pleasure they were created. So everyone before us were created for God's pleasure. All creatures, all the whole world, every individual was created. And then it says, and for thy pleasure they are, which includes all of us. So nobody sitting here has been created without God's desire that they would bring him honor and glory and praise. So that is our responsibility. So that is why when mankind, now we have a choice. We have a choice whether we're going to live our life for Jesus and for God, or whether we're going to try to serve self. And if you read, as you read Ecclesiastes, and as I read that, if you thought about the amount of times the writer says, And I sought out, and I wanted this, and I wanted this, and it was all vanity. If we live our life when it's all about me, It will be vanity. And we will get to the end and say, whereas when we live our life and it's about God and about what He wants, then we have purpose. And we have this feeling inside that God gives us that we are bringing honor and glory to Him, and that He is blessed by it. And even at the end of the day, when all we got done doing was fixing the broken piece of equipment or cleaning up the child or taking care of the sick, whatever, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter, because you realize that this is where God has placed you and this is what He wants you to do right now. And that life that everyone else is trying to live, at the end of the day, they aren't any happier. And you actually have fulfillment in your life. My question this morning, and that is God getting the honor and glory from your life and from my life? That's what He desires. And in Ecclesiastes 3, verse 14, turn there, we have these words about fearing God, the reason we fear God. And Roger brought that out in the devotions this morning. And that is that God doesn't change. And that's the reason He wants our entire life. And that's the reason it doesn't matter what all happens in life about us. As life changes, there's so many things in life that changes that we can't control. But God never changes. And we can just fear Him. Ecclesiastes 3, verse 14 says this, "And I know that whatsoever God doeth, it shall be forever. Nothing can be put into it, nor anything taken from it. And God doeth it, that men should fear before Him." So God has established God in His immutability is always the same. So when we go to God, He is always the same. In life, we find that there's nothing ever the same, it seems like. As soon as we have this whole package put together on how it's going to all plan out, then somebody gets sick and you can't go to the family gathering, whatever party, or you can't. It's just the way it is. But with God, it's always the same. And when you go to God, He's always there. Another beautiful thing about His conclusion in the third point I have here, His conclusion of fearing God and obeying His commandments, His whole duty of man, and that is it can be done by all people. So if Ecclesiastes would have been written, and he would have concluded that the only way you can really find true happiness in life is if you have a certain amount of things, then there would be a lot of people here and in the world that would say, well, then we will never be able to live it. But that's not what this writer taught us. He says that the whole duty of man is to fear God. So this morning, it doesn't matter whether you're young or whether you're old or whether you're rich or you're poor. It doesn't matter where you live. It doesn't matter if you live in America or you live in Ukraine. It doesn't matter if you are simple or if you're smart. We all can do this. And so every person in the world, every individual that is born, has the opportunity to find fulfillment in life. They have equal, it doesn't matter where you're at. Every person, nobody, whether you're in jail, whether you're in bad health, whatever, everyone has the opportunity to fear God and keep His commandments. It's just a choice we do. And every person can find fulfillment in that, in life. It would just be so sad and so wrong if only wise people could have it, or if only rich people could have it, or if only old people could have it, because we know some of us ain't old yet. Or if only young people could have it, then we get old, we would lose it. But it's fear God and keep His commandments. The whole duty of man, it can be done by everyone. And then the fourth and last thing I have, and that is that whenever we actually fear the Lord, Proverbs says it is the beginning of wisdom and knowledge, which is interesting because Solomon sought this whole thing out, and he says it's all vanity, but what he missed was the most important part, and that is, first of all, you find out God, and you fear God, and then wisdom and knowledge that he adds goes to the right spot. And then you can use wisdom, but it's godly wisdom. You have knowledge. It's godly knowledge. And your life produces an aroma to God that is pleasing. This morning, are you fulfilling your duty? Are you fulfilling the most important thing? And is the life you're living, the one life that you have, are you living it? I trust that you are. In conclusion, I thought of the words of Jesus, where he says in Matthew chapter 16, verse 25 to 26, "For whosoever will save his life shall lose it. If it's all about me and all about keeping my life and getting what I accomplished, we will lose it. But whosoever will lose his life for my sake shall find it. For what is a man profited if he gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? This morning I ask you this question. Will you fear God and keep his commandments? Or will you continue to try to live your one life? Give me a kneel for prayer.